the jump from half marathon to a marathon is huge. And it's like a whole different type of training.
Diz Runs Radio, episode 1227 starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey, y'all, real quick before we dive into today's episode of the show, just a little reminder, maybe hearing it for the first time. I don't know. Depends how long you've been around these parts. But just letting you know that we give away that free training plan at the beginning of each month. And as this episode comes out, that means we're just about a couple weeks away from picking the next winner. So if you haven't got yourself entered into the giveaway yet, it's like I said, it's a free training plan, 16 weeks. It's not half-baked. It's not one size fits all. You know, if you've been around for a while, you know I don't do that kind of nonsense. It's all custom, all made for you. It's exactly the same level of care and attention as, you know, that I give you the winners as if you paid for it. So there's really no downside here. You got to get in it to win it, though, at dizruns.com/giveaway is the link. You can also enter from the homepage of dizruns.com. Either place gets you back to the same. Either means justify the ends. I don't know. Either way gets you there is ultimately what it comes down to. You get yourself entered into the giveaway. At the beginning of each month, I pick a new winner. And you don't have to re-enter in it each month either. Remember that. All you can do, enter once in it for life, or at least is until you opt out. You know, I mean, it's up to you. If you don't want to have a chance to win free stuff anymore, you just say, hey, I don't want to win free stuff anymore. We take you out of the lottery or out of the drawing or whatever you want to call it. So get in it if you haven't done so already. You got nothing to lose. Dizruns.com/giveaway or on the homepage, dizruns.com. Either way, may the odds be ever in your favor. May the random number generator smile upon you at the beginning of next month or the next month or the next month. And just so we're clear, you don't have to use it right away either. Once you win it, it's in your pocket. You use it when you want to, whether it's a couple weeks, couple months, couple years down the road. You cash in when you're ready. So dizruns.com/giveaway. Now, without any further ado, let's go ahead and dive in to today's episode of the show. Hey, y'all. I've been looking forward to today's chat pretty much ever since I first bumped into today's guest on X. I don't know, a month ago, a month and a half ago, something like that. A little while back, we bumped into each other. And pretty much every time I see a post of his or you know, see something that he's got going on, I'm more and more certain that, I'm going to really enjoy the chat. Hopefully that you're going to enjoy the chat. And definitely that we're not going to have any shortage of things to talk about today. In fact, as is, I don't know, fairly often the case, we're probably going to have more things to talk about than we're going to have time for today. So I don't know, maybe there'll be a round two at some point down the road. But he's a physical therapist. He's a running coach. Obviously, he does some running as well. But if you've been around here for a while, you know that my athletic training background, anytime I can talk to physical therapists or other fellow running coaches, pick their brains, kind of learn some things, hopefully help y'all learn some things as well. That's my bread and butter. And that's what we're going to do today. And you know, I don't know where all we're going to go. But I know that the first topic, not that we're going to necessarily talk about, but the first topic that brought us together was one of those controversial topics that seems like maybe he dabbles in a little, not necessarily controversy, but like, you know, just kind of dabbling on the edges a little bit of why half marathon finish times aren't necessarily great predictors of full marathon finish times, which is something that I agree with as well. I don't know, maybe you're clutching your pearls already. We'll see how it all goes, but lots of good stuff today. So let's get the party started and officially welcome Dr. Nick Gornick to the show. So thanks for joining us today, Nick. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And y'all, if you enjoyed today's conversation, kind of find out more about Nick's services, and especially if you're in the greater Chicagoland area, that's where he does his in-person practicing of physical therapy. Definitely check him out. RebuiltPT.com is the website. All just like it's spelled, or like it sounds, I guess is how it's spelled. Rebuilt, the letter P, the letter T as in physicaltherapy.com. On the socials, same handle, all the places, X, Instagram, Threads, you know, all the normal places, I guess, or at least all the places I frequent. Maybe they're not all normal, but at Rebuilt PT on all the socials as well. Like I said, definitely worth a follow on X. And all the other places as well. Dizruns.com/1227 will get you back to the show notes for today. links, photos, the whole nine, as per usual, dizruns.com/1227. So, Nick, the way we always start off each episode of the show is with a pretty simple and straightforward question. Sometimes it's an easy one to answer. Sometimes, you know, it's a little bit of a guessing game because there's a lot of good options. But one way or the other, it's a good place to start the conversation. That's just to simply ask, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
Yeah, so I think over time for me, it's changed. For the longest time for me, it was the mile, and then in college is the 1500, which I loved because the training was fun. You get to do a little bit of everything. Right. You're doing some speed training, like pure speed, and then you're doing like speed endurance. You get long runs, and there's a big mix of everything. But now that I'm post-college, I'm a little bit older now, I can't handle the mile training like I used to. So I'd say half marathon is my favorite distance right now. For kind of the same reasons. You get a little bit of everything. You can still do some shorter interval training and it's not going to like hurt your program at all. You get long runs, you do tempos, and then the race day experience, there's still a decent amount of like strategy involved. Right. But when you blow up, it's not as catastrophic as 26.2. So there's a little less risk, I think, on race day. Like, you know, it's going to be a little more of a positive experience. Where on a marathon, it doesn't take a whole lot for things to unravel a bit and for it to be quite a grind and painful experience.
Yeah, that's very true. And I love the idea of you know, some of the strategy that goes into racing a half marathon. You can tell that means you know, you kind of said it in there, the track background, the cross country background, the racing background that I don't have. I mean, I didn't really get into running until in my mid-20s, late-20s. So, like, I never really raced competitively or anything like that. So, I guess there's always the strategy as far as what my race is, but it's you know, it doesn't come out, I guess, as much in the competitive environment. But like you said, kind of running, I guess, been pretty much part of your life since, I mean, at least high school, college days?
Yeah, I mean, so I started running, sixth grade was the first time I started really running. I went out for the cross-country team, and honestly, I don't remember how or why I started doing it. But yeah, that's how I got into it. There was a while there where I didn't want to run in high school and college. And one of my teammates told me like, hey, you know, you're having a pretty good, you're doing pretty well with this. I think it would be dumb for you to not continue. Mm. And I remember saying like, well, I don't want to run in high school because if I run in high school, I'm kind of putting myself down this path and I don't want to run in college. And that's what, you know, seventh grade me was saying. And now here I am. 20 years later, and it's completely changed my life. I went, you know, ran in high school, ran in college. All of my long-term friends are through running. I built a career off of this. So like, I can't imagine where I would be if I didn't stick with running because I wanted to play football.
Okay.
And I did 1 year of football and I got more injuries in that 1 year of football than I have in my whole life of playing hockey. And then the running injuries that I've had, you know, they're fairly minor, but football, you can have some pretty, you know, debilitating injuries.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, and this is clearly paint with a broad brush, is going to be an exception to this rule somewhere, but most of the folks that are probably going to excel in track and cross, certainly in cross country, maybe, you know, maybe there's a bit more overlap between football and track with, you know, some of the speed stuff, sprinters, things like that. But you know, if you're running the distance, you're running the mile, you're running cross country, things like that, probably not the greatest, again, in general, overlap between that and somebody who's also going to excel on the football field.
Yeah, there wasn't a whole lot of overlap. The only reason I was doing well in football was because I was an early bloomer physically. Right. So like in eighth grade, I was 5'5", 130 pounds and competing against guys who were, you know, 30, 40 pounds less than me.
Right.
And then if I stuck with it, you know, everybody else would have kept growing and gotten bigger and stronger. And I did not. So it would have been football in high school would have been tough for me.
Yeah, for sure. The injuries would have more than likely been continued to be more of a thing.
Yes.
So what was college running like? Again, something that I haven't experienced firsthand, and I know a lot of, you know, some folks that are listening have, but some folks certainly plenty haven't. What was your college running experience like?
My college running experience was fantastic. So I went to Augustana College in Rock Island, Illinois, Division III school. And I'm a huge proponent of D3 for a lot of reasons, but the main reason is that everybody who goes out for any team, whether it's, you know, baseball, soccer, football, cross country, track, we're all doing it because of the love of the sport.
Right.
Like you're not getting any scholarship money to do it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, everybody who's doing it like truly loves what they're doing. And I was on a big team. So that's not the case everywhere. And it's not the case for a lot of Division I schools either, which is, I think, why I'm a proponent of D3. Like we had 50 guys on our cross country team. The women's team was similar size. And then track, we had anywhere between like 90 and 120.
That's a huge like when we, team.
Yeah, it was huge. So when we traveled to meets, it was, you know, two coach buses full. So it was very big. And in our conference, there were maybe two other teams that were that big. And I run into other teams that are fairly big in that size. But so it was unique because we had so many people on our team. So the social scene was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Like I've met so many great people through cross country and track. And then, yeah, so I ran all 4 years. My training was definitely different in college than high school. It was a little less intense. Mm-hmm. My high school was kind of a powerhouse program where we had a reputation of burning athletes out after the goal of winning. And, it was a great experience. I had a lot of, like some of my teammates went on to be very competitive after high school, but it was a lot. It really milked out like every bit of talent that I had. So I kind of peaked a little bit early in college. I kind of riding off of that high of like the high mileage high school cross country and track training. But we ran anywhere from, you know, 50 to 70 miles a week through college. I raced primarily the 1500. I just look back and I realized I didn't run a single 5K at all through all of college, which is, I think, a mistake on my part. I should have done more of those. Because cross country is 8K in Division III. So you've got to be able to run further distances. But I didn't totally understand the longer distance at that time. I really liked the mile, and the type of training and the way that I trained didn't translate a ton to cross country. If I knew then what I know now, I think I would have done much better with 8K in cross country. But yeah, I had a great time in college training, track and cross country. It was a fantastic experience.
Good, good. Was there ever any, and I know that some folks struggle with this, and you know, especially when it was competitive, whether it was high school or college or a little bit of both, of almost like, and it kind of sounds like, you know, maybe it was a little bit of the case in high school, or at least with some of the friends, like you said, kind of the burnout factor of really being really competitive. Was there any break coming out of college, or was it kind of like I'm done with running for a while, and then you find your way back to it, or did you just kind of transition into the next phase of running post college?
Yeah, so I had a bit of a burnout period. When you finish college, like when you're on a big team like that and you're running with your friends every day, and then you graduate and you go move to your new town, mm-hmm. and you're just running by yourself, it's tough to make that transition. Like when I was running for the team, you're always running for something bigger than yourself. You're trying to win a conference title as a team, or you're part of the top seven in cross country. So you have these other six guys that are counting on you. And then when you graduate, you're just running for yourself. And that's which is great. I found my way back to it. But at first, like, it's a big transition and it's hard. So I took some time off, mostly because of PT school. So I was in PT school for 3 years. I ran on and off, but like with the workload of school, it was hard to just to really dedicate time to training. And then I got into cycling for a little bit. Some of my classmates were into cycling, and I had done a decent amount of cycling prior. So we started doing these weekly Sunday rides, and that really got me back into endurance training. Mm-hmm. And I biked pretty heavily for like 3 to 4 years before I shifted back into more like only running training. So yeah, I had a bit of a break, and cycling was nice, you know, to still work on endurance, but not running per se. And then now I'm fully back into pretty much only running for my training.
Gotcha. Was there any sort of specific impetus, or was it just to get back into running, or did it just kind of feel natural? Like what was, I don't know, I guess, was there an aha moment, if you will?
Not really. Part of it was, so I was living downtown Chicago, and in the winter, you can't really bike. Mm. And my wife and I were living in this tiny little apartment. We didn't have room for like a trainer or anything like that. Mm. So if I wanted to bike, I would have to go to the gym. So I started running again in the winters, and then that kind of transitioned into sticking with it through the summers, started signing up with some races. And then some of my old college teammates had kept running the whole time. So I was able to start joining races with them. Right. And it just kind of snowballed from there.
Gotcha. Gotcha. You talk about, you know, kind of getting pretty heavy into cycling there for a while. Curious your perspective, both kind of just the personal, you know, your personal experience, but also your professional experience, the benefits for runners and having, you know, some time in the saddle, whether it's, you know, a prolonged period like you had where that was kind of the I don't want to say the priority, but that was kind of your thing for a while, or whether mm-hmm. it's as a cross training tool or just some kind of way to maintain some fitness, to mix things up a little bit, et cetera, et cetera. I feel like there's a decent overlap, but obviously it's certainly not a circle, you know, like that Venn diagram is not a circle in terms of how running will benefit cycling will benefit running. But sounds like it was useful for you in that, you know, to keep that engine strong over that 3 or 4 year period.
Yeah. And I think that word engine is the biggest part of why I advocate for a lot of runners to spend some time on the bike, especially like after big workouts. So I think the bike is great for maybe the day after a track workout. If your legs are feeling a little bit beat up, it gives your tendons more of a rest, but you could still be working your aerobic system. And then it's also like, it's just kind of it's a different way to train that allows you to let go a little bit. At least for a lot of people, because if you really want to track your cycling data, you need to buy a lot of equipment. Right. And for a lot of runners who are just getting into it, they don't want to do that. So, and that's fine. It's great to just go out and bike and you're not paying attention to your speed, your power, your heart rate. You're just biking easy-ish right. for a longer period of time. And it's a great way to get in, I think, just a lot of aerobic training and almost like metabolic training. Like if you can do a 4 hour easy bike ride, like that's fantastic training for the marathon. And I have a decent number of clients who do that sort of thing where they go out on the weekend and they'll bike 40, 50 miles, don't keep track of anything other than how long they're out there. Mm-hmm. And it helps a ton.
Wow. Yeah. That's a long ride. I'm just imagine how my backside would feel after that type of thing. But I guess it's like anything, you build up to it for after a while, you know, you don't start with 4 hours right out of the gate and then you adapt and the saddle sores, you know, hopefully work themselves out in the shorter distances or shorter durations. And then for the longer stuff, you just get on and cruise.
Yep. I think the saddle is definitely one of the biggest barriers to get over initially. Mm-hmm. Cause it takes some time. It's not comfortable for a while. And then once you kind of adapt to it, you don't even notice anymore.
Right. Right. So you get back into running and, you know, like you mentioned kind of in the high school or in the college days and then the high school days, like never really running anything longer than, you know, never running a 5K, I think you said in there, you know, you get back into running. I'm assuming that you probably start out with, you know, probably nothing shorter than a 5K or I don't know, maybe there's some shorter track races in the Chicago area, but, probably pretty soon you start to graduate up. What was it like to kind of test yourself on some of those longer distances relative to what you had experienced prior?
So it was, a lot of it was very similar. So I can't even remember what I started out with. I think I ran a couple 5Ks. But the first big race I really trained for post-college was a half marathon. And so kind of like what we talked about or how we bumped into each other with the half marathon and the full marathon, I feel like a lot of the training that I was accustomed to and things that I already knew, like the principles of training, all those still really applied to the half marathon. Cause you're not thinking a ton about like bonking or running through all your glycogen and all that stuff with the half marathon. Right. So I was able to kind of fake my way through it without really knowing as much as I know now. And it worked out pretty well, but it was a lot of learning on the fly and realizing like, okay, I need to back off a little bit on some of these workouts, start going longer and easier, and really finding that easy pace and what easy really means. Because when I came back to running, all the paces that I had in my head from when I ran in college, like those don't apply anymore.
Right.
And it takes a while to undo all of that and kind of learn what your new normal is. And then once I figured that out, things changed and it got much easier, more enjoyable and all of that.
Gotcha. So much to unpack there, but since you brought up that half marathon marathon comparison, let's dig into that a little bit and we'll start getting into some of the, I don't know, to me, I mean, not that the history isn't a fun stuff, but like some of the geeky stuff, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But I've, I don't know. I mean, I've always just, I don't know if it's just deep in my core or whatever, but whenever you see these different calculators out there, and maybe it's because they don't apply to me, because it's like, you look at the, especially for the shorter distance stuff, because you look at it and it's like, you know, if you can run X in the 5K, you can run Y in the marathon. And like, I just don't, I've never been able to wrap my head around why, like, I mean, not that I'm probably a sub 20 minute 5K or anymore, but I have a sub 20 minute 5K, and you plug that into, not by much, by like 3 seconds, but it's still sub 20 minutes. But you plug that into one of those calculators, and it's like, oh, you should be able to run a 3 hour and 20 minute marathon, or a 3 hour and 30 minute marathon. It's like, yeah, nope. Yeah. At the time I was running 1957, I was running, 4 hours and 40 minutes or something like that in the marathon. And of course, at least in my mind, the longer it gets, the closer it starts to line up. But even then, like the half marathon, to your point, the glycogen situation, just the time on feet, especially for somebody like me who is, if you're going to be a 4 hour marathoner or a 3.5 hour marathoner or a 5 hour marathon, just by the time on feet versus what that would translate to your half marathon, like those are, I don't want to say they're two different races because they obviously are, but I mean, it's apples and oranges in my head. And it sounds like we're kind of in agreement with that, but we'd love to kind of get your thoughts on why those predictors aren't great. And we'll just kind of see where the conversation goes from there.
Yeah. So I agree with pretty much everything you just said. I think that the calculators, someone pointed this out to me on Threads when I posted this. So I said that I don't think the half marathon is a great predictor of the full marathon. And the reason I think that is because I think most new runners or anyone in my situation who is coming from a racing background of shorter distances can take those same principles, like I mentioned before, and apply them to the half marathon. So like you can do a lot of interval training and like get away with not doing super long runs, right, and still run a pretty good half marathon. But then the jump from half marathon to a marathon is huge. And it's like a whole different type of training. And so what someone pointed out to me was they think those calculators are a better indicator of your potential if you train correctly. And I think that's a better way to put it. Like what it says I could run for the full marathon, I think is accurate if I trained, the right way. And the last marathon I ran, training didn't go super well, so I didn't run that time, but I think I could get close. Mm-hmm. But for a lot of people, someone who's a little more fast twitchy, or I think it's McMillan has the different categories of like speedster versus endurance monster. Mm-hmm. If you're more of a speedster, I think you'll do better at these shorter distances, and it'll overestimate how fast you can run in a marathon. And if you're more of a endurance monster, you can do a great marathon, it might overestimate how fast you can run a mile or a 5K, because it's just so different with the types of training and the types of athletes that we have out there. Like there's a wide spectrum of what you're good at.
Right.
And so I just think it's a tough comparison to like say for sure that if you run this distance in this time, you can do a marathon in this time.
What about to partially play devil's advocate, but also partially because like I feel like in my personal and coaching experience, not that it's been exact and not that I've used the calculator necessarily, but what about comparing down? So like if you take somebody's marathon time and not going all the way down to a 5K, but is there any I don't want to say any chance, but like I feel like there's maybe a little bit more accuracy going, all right, you can you just PR'd the marathon in 4 hours and 30 minutes. Maybe 2 hours and a half marathon isn't as beyond the pale as you might think it might be. I guess maybe I've already asked the question, but like you think there's any more accuracy in comparing down versus comparing up?
Yeah, that's 100%. And I say that to a lot of my clients too. Like if you train for the marathon and run a good marathon, then I think it's a very good predictor of what you should be able to run in the half.
Okay.
And then probably extrapolating that down to maybe the 10K if you're able to change training a little bit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think comparing down, it's much better all the way down to some shorter distances. Like if you run a mile, I think it's a pretty good indicator of what you should be able to run in the 800.
Okay.
But if you flip it around, like your 800 time doesn't extrapolate out to a mile.
Right.
Cause we see a lot of like 400, 800 runners who are you know, barely getting to the finish in the 800 without kind of tying up and dying, mm-hmm. where milers tend to almost get stronger as the 800 goes on, but they don't have that high end speed necessarily,
right,
compared to a 400 runner. So yeah, I think comparing down is a much better way to use the calculators than comparing up.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And honestly, I hadn't really ever thought about that until you were talking about the method of, like, if you trained well, and I hadn't thought about that for comparing up either. And that does make a lot of sense. You know, like if you can do this and then you train appropriately for the longer distance races, maybe you've got, you know, this is kind of the closer to the potential. So that's interesting. I'm glad that's why I love having these conversations, because it's you take it out of, you know, 260 characters or whatever Twitter is these days, or X these days, flesh it out a little bit, and maybe there's some different insights. So you mentioned in there a couple times about you know, kind of training intelligently, training the right way, especially for the longer distance races, and I feel like as a heart rate training guy myself, you're probably speaking my love language there of focusing on running your easier runs easy. And you've even kind of said that a couple times in there. But, you know, in your kind of personal and professional experience, and again, you're going to be preaching to, if your answer is anything close to what I think it might be, you're probably going to be preaching to at least my choir. But how important is that for runners, especially maybe as we continue to get older, to really prioritize easy days and keeping our easy runs easy?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably the most important thing, or the biggest issue that I see. Mm. Like, occasionally I see somebody who doesn't go hard enough, like they don't do any speed days ever. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, I see people who are running just too fast, or their heart rate's way too high on their easy runs.
Right.
And I was one of these people for a while, where I was looking at my heart rate data and I was like, that can't be right. There's no way that my heart rate's 170 right now. Like, I'm at conversational pace. And I think there is some nuance to that early on. Like, new runners, their heart rate tends to be really high while they're still figuring out their, like, coordination and running economy. Mm-hmm. But once you get more experienced, I think definitely keeping easier days easy. And really, like, sometimes it helps to not even have your watch on. Just go out and, you know, try to stay, like, calm and being able to talk comfortably the whole time for your recovery days. And then being able to extrapolate that to, like, a longer run, get these really long efforts in that help for the marathon, primarily with your metabolism, like trying to not burn through all your glycogen by mile 18, mm-hmm. Which is such a common issue.
Yeah. And that's something that, again, there might be some pearl clutch in here, but I'd love to dive into that as much as you want to, or at least a little bit more, because, I've been pretty honest about this, or I mean, I've been pretty honest about everything on the podcast, I think. But like, I read the Primal Endurance book back some probably 6-7 years ago, and kind of got probably a little bit farther deep down into the low carb endurance training. But you know, the positive of that is it really did force me to slow down, keep heart rate in check, and really was my gateway drug into heart rate training. And since then, I've taken in some more carbs. But I feel like, for me personally, my N equals one, for whatever it's worth, becoming more fat adapted, and you know, what gets lost here is I'm not saying I'm 100% fat burner, because if you know physiology, you know that's not the case. But whatever percentage is that I feel like I've become more efficient at metabolizing, you know, body fat during a run. I mean, my I still fuel during a race, but like my need for fueling is decreased markedly. And I feel like I'm running better than I ever have. But I guess again, all that to say, just for that bit of context, is that kind of what you're meaning in terms of improving the metabolism and not burning through the glycogen as quickly?
Exactly. Yeah, like becoming more of a fat burner. Which, with coaching, like the way that I do things, it's really, I don't really have a good way to measure it. Like, I'm not in a lab where I can do the exhale breath analysis and all that stuff. So you kind of just have to rely on the research, which is not great because most of them are 12-week studies. Mm-hmm. So I've turned to – there are some coaches and physiologists out there who have their own personal bank of data that they, you know, publish and give examples from. And that's kind of – like that combined with, you know, anecdotal experience is the best that we have, unless you have ways to measure this in your clients, which is expensive and difficult to do.
Right. When you look at some of that data and some of that research, and again, maybe some of it is you know, just your N equals one or the folks that you're working with, And maybe there's probably not a hard answer to this question, which is fine. I feel like it's one of those where, you know, you can kind of take the science and then extrapolate out a little bit, but it's also, you know, you kind of got to play with it and experiment with it and find out what works best for you. But I've said before, and some pushback, but I was surprised that a lot of people were like, yeah, maybe you're onto something here, that for a lot of, I don't want to say average runners, because I don't know that there are such a thing as what is an average runner, but like a lot of folks that are in that 4-hour marathon, 5-hour marathon range, somewhere in that vicinity, plus or minus a little bit, maybe overfueling on race day is more of a problem than underfueling on race day, as the way I see it, is evidenced by, you know, how many horror stories of GI distress between, you know, mile, you know, 20 and 25 or 18 and 25 do we hear about. And again, I don't know, maybe I don't know exactly the tie in here, exactly what the question is, but like, you know, that just to me ties into either you're not fat adapted enough, so you're taking in more calories than your body can use while at that level of intensity, or maybe you are fat adapted enough, but you're reading, you know, the articles or the posts or the tweets or whatever, where people are like, you know, you got to fuel every 30 minutes, which makes me want to pull my hair out, because if I tried to fuel every 30 minutes for a marathon, like, yeah, I'd DNF at mile 20 and just be stuck in a porta potty for a day and a half. So, you know, I guess maybe the question is, you know, thoughts on overfueling versus underfueling for kind of that, you know, 4-3.5 to 5.5 hour marathon runner.
Yeah, I think that definitely could be an issue. And again, it's really hard to tell other than trial and error without like doing some high tech tests. There's a chapter in the book Endure. It's about fueling and some of the experimentation they did with Kipchoge's 2-hour attempt a few years back. And what they found was like there's such variability in how much people can metabolize during exercise.
Right.
And like I've run into people who can eat a ton and like they're fine. And then I'm on the other side where I got a side stitch like 5 miles into my marathon, and I took a gel right before the start, and I took a gel at 5 miles, and I was already thinking like, this is too much. I can't handle it. And I did a ton of training, like gut training leading up to it. But I just have not been able to find the right, you know, mix of gels, how much to take. And, I know I'm not alone in that scenario where there's a lot of people who have GI issues.
Right.
And, honestly, without the fancy equipment, the biggest thing is trial and error in training and trying to figure out, you know, what can you take in when you're at this marathon effort, how often, and how do you feel afterwards?
Right. With that trial and error in training, and this is something that again, I've talked about a little bit, but always love different perspectives and potentially different opinions, because that's how we learn, right? Is the idea, and this is more of a kind of general running truism of never do anything new on race day than what you haven't, you know, tried in training, which I don't particularly disagree with, but at the same time, and maybe this is my heart rate bias coming in, where it's I'll do a little bit of, you know, we mentioned earlier some people don't do enough speed work. I'm probably one. That's probably me, if we're going to be honest. So there's that level of heart rate bias or heart rate easy running training coming into the, you know, that type of bias coming into it. But like, you know, I don't do a whole lot of marathon, at least extended marathon pace simulation type of training runs. You know, like I don't want to say that's what race day is for, but like I might do 5 or 6 or 8 miles to kind of feel it, especially at the end of a long run. I'm a big fan of the fast finish long run. So, you know, whatever it is, 10 miles easy and then 8 miles at pace or whatever. But all that to say, I struggle to wrap my head around how that type of run or just a long run in general, unless you're doing the whole thing, start to finish at marathon pace, is a good indicator, or at least gives you enough confidence to like fully buy into, you know, if I took a gel every whatever 4 miles or whatever your fueling source is, you know, when I'm running at 10 minute pace versus when I'm running on a race day at 8 minute pace, well, like, you know, that means I'm taking them that much closer together, and by the end, does it catch up to me, that type of thing. So I hope that makes a little bit of sense in terms of just, you know, yes, try things on in training, of course, but to me, it's not exactly a one-to-one comparison to how things are going to go on race day. And maybe that's where, you know, you get a good idea, but then you still have to test it on race day and hope that it works out, and then tweak and refine for the next race.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Like in training, you probably only have a few attempts to try this stuff. Mm-hmm. And even then, like you said, it's not a one-to-one ratio. So like, for example, I like to do a half marathon at marathon pace in the middle of a longer run for like myself or some of my faster athletes. Mm-hmm. So like we did, it was like a 4 mile warm up and then a half marathon at marathon pace and then 3 or 4 mile cool down. And in that half marathon, we're fueling like we would on race day, wearing our race day gear. Mm-hmm. And that was like the closest we got to simulating race day, but it's still only half the race.
Right.
Like, you don't know how you're going to feel taking in gels at that rate once you get to mile 16, 18, mm-hmm. 24. So like I had and I felt good doing it in the half marathon. But then when we got to race day, it was different. I don't know if it was conditions were different or just everything surrounding the race day, even if
there's
train.
The nerves and the adrenaline and the excitement of race day versus a training run.
Yep. And I traveled, so I'm sleeping somewhere new. There was a little bit of a travel snafu getting there. Like I barely got there in time to get my packet. So there was some of that issue. And, so things happen and you can't always prepare. And I think that's one piece of why a lot of runners like don't nail it on their first marathon. It takes a couple. I've seen a couple who really do well and like, I don't want to say PR because it's your first marathon. So everything's going to be a PR, but they run a really good race their first time. And then like they struggle to match that again in the next couple attempts. But for the most part, what I see is you do your first one and you learn what to do and what not to do.
Right.
And then that's your first trial and error. And then when you come back the next time it goes better. And then usually, so like, I don't have a ton of people who like to do many, many marathons, but the people who've done 3 or 4 by their third one, they're like, all right, I know my routine. I know what I can take in with fuel. And like, that's when they really figure it out and have an awesome race.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like that's, you know, again, paint with a broad brush or generalizing, but like that's sounds about right. It's just, you know, except for I talked to a couple of folks where that first one was their best and they keep trying to match it. And I think sometimes maybe that's one of those ignorance is bliss scenarios where you almost go into it not knowing what you don't know. So you don't overthink things maybe and don't let your head get in the way and you just go out and you run and you're like, wow, that was great. And then you're like, then you maybe overanalyze everything and try to get everything exactly the same as you did the first time. And it comes back to bite you, but yeah, there's definitely with the marathon, I feel like, for all factors, but for fueling, for training, for the mentality, the mental piece that goes into it as well. Once you get a couple, few of them under your belt, not that you guarantees PRs after that and continued improved performance. But at least some of those variables start to become a little bit easier, more easily controlled because you kind of know what works and what doesn't for you.
Mm-hmm. And I tell clients this too. Like if you look at the elite stage, you see both scenarios as well. Like you'll see every once in a while, you know, there's someone comes out for their first marathon and they're awesome.
Right.
But like even these really experienced runners who've been competing for 10, 15 years, a lot of times their first marathon is not great. But then after, you know, the next season they come back and then they're competing at the front of the race and they don't fade at the end like they did in their first one. So if it can happen to the best in the world, I mean, it can happen to us. So don't beat yourself up if the first one doesn't go exactly how you expect it.
Right. Well, and that's maybe a whole other topic that I don't know that we'll get all the way into it, but just the comparing between elites and then us mortals, you know, and in that scenario that you just laid out, Nick, of course, it's not that nobody's looking at the elite who ran their first marathon and faded at the end as like, oh, well, that's what normally happens. They look at, right, maybe not normal, but most people are going to look at the one who comes out of seemingly out of nowhere, or it's their first time, really flat, you know, for the college runner that was the college superstar. And then, you know, this, their first marathon is this showcase and they come out and they run really strong. Maybe they win, maybe they end up, you know, on the podium, whatever. And it's like, oh, well, if so-and-so can do it in their first marathon, then why can't I? And I just like that comparison game between us and the elites. Yes, there's things to learn. Yes, there's certainly things to be inspired by and motivated by, But important to remember that, you know, maybe we're not sleeping 12 or 14 hours a night, and that, like, our full-time job isn't running and training and strength training and getting massages and recovery and all those types of things, like it very well might be for them.
Yeah. There's I think I haven't fully formulated my thoughts on what we can and can't compare to the elites. But some of the things that I definitely tell clients is, like, look at how much time they spend going easy.
Right.
Like, it's a lot. It's a huge chunk of
their time. Their easy is 7 minutes. So why can't my easy be 7 minutes?
Yeah. And that's the crazy part too. If some of them, their easy pace is, you know, 6:30. It's wild. But then another example that I show people all the time is, every year there's this video that goes around. It's a group of the, you know, elite Kenyan marathoners doing this. It's like a shakeout run, just in the town with people of all like talents of running. And they're going like 9 minute pace, 10 minute pace. And that's part of their elite marathon training.
Right.
So if that, like, think about that, they're running sub 5 minute pace for their marathon. And they're doing parts of their training at 9 or 10 minute pace, right, you know, twice or half the speed. So there's something we can learn about that too, where I think it applies to, you know, us average runners, where walking is, can be part of your training.
Right.
If your heart rate gets a little bit up, if you're in that, you know, 100 to 120 range on a walk, like, that's helpful.
Right.
So things like that, I think, are helpful to extrapolate too.
Yeah.
But not everything.
Not everything. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing those thoughts as they continue to formulate. But that's just always something that, like, you know, oh well, you know, so and so does this workout. You know, what do you think about me doing that workout? It's like, well, so and so is running 100 miles a week and you're running 30. You know, like maybe maybe we can be inspired by it, but, like, let's not try to emulate it exactly, because that would be 80% of your training volume or whatever. That would be, you know, 50% of your training volume would be that workout. And that's, you know, 5% of their training volume. So let's tap the brakes just a little bit.
Yep. And I've seen that issue with double threshold with with Jakob Ingebrigtsen. That's, the more he wins, the more that's going to be something that everybody wants to do. And, it's a small percentage of his mileage, but, if I were to go out and do a double threshold session, like, that would be a huge chunk of my weekly mileage. So yeah, it doesn't all, we can't do everything that the elites do, because they have a lot of time and to dedicate to running and recovering, which when we're working other jobs, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, before we run out of time, Nick, which is happening sooner than I wanted it to, but, you know, I guess that's a sign of a good conversation. You had sent over a handful of different other topics and things to get into. And like I said in the intro, we're definitely at this point not going to get into all of them. But one of them that you said you like to talk about, and I've noticed it on social media and things like that, is strength training and plyometric training and how that helps us as runners. And I'm a big proponent of strength training as well. We talk about it here a lot, but I always love to get different voices, different takes, again, different perspectives, maybe different angles. On how strength training can be a useful component to a runner. Not only can be, I would say is, I don't know, maybe you're going to say can be, but what are some of your thoughts on strength training, plyometric training, kind of doing some of that work that most runners, I don't like to say, but I think the facts say, would rather not do, yet, you know, it in my opinion, at least, it seems like it's pretty beneficial.
Yeah, so I think strength and plyometric training are very helpful for runners of all distances, all talent levels. And yeah, I agree. A lot of runners don't want to do it, which is why I talk about it a lot, and ways to just make it easier or, like, more approachable. Cause there's a lot of reasons runners don't want to lift. For some, it's like they don't feel strong, so they don't want to go to the gym and lift.
Right.
Others just don't like it. And, I try to find ways to make it enjoyable. But yeah, I agree. I think the facts say that it's helpful for a lot of reasons. I think it's helpful for just day-to-day life.
Right.
So I talk about this with parents, grandparents, simple things like picking up your kids. You need strength through a range of motion to bend your knees, get down, pick them up. There's always going to be times in your life where you have to push and pull things and move stuff, and you want strength for that. It's helpful for your muscles and tendons and joints. Like, this is a whole different topic, but if we look at people with arthritis, generally the rate of arthritis is way lower in active people than sedentary people. And strength training doesn't, like, grind away your joints. So if you can keep your muscles, tendons, ligaments, soft tissues all strong, that's helpful for your body in the long run. And then the biggest benefit, I think, of strengthening a plyometric training is the performance benefit for running. There was this awesome review that came out, it might be almost 2 years ago now, that showed all these different types of programs and the effect that they had on running economy and race times. And to simplify it all the way down, essentially what they found was anything that was like compound lifting at a fairly heavy weight, like something you can lift 5 to 10 times, resulted in a 2 to 4% increase in race times compared to people who didn't race at all. Wow. Which I think is huge. I mean, that's like putting on a super shoe, you'll get that kind of benefit. And if you lift weights, you'll get that benefit. And it applies to other things as well. So it's like a win-win in my opinion.
Nick, just to make sure I'm clear, you said compared to people that don't race at all, but did you mean compared to people that don't do any strength training at all?
Oh yeah. Sorry. I meant your race time is faster compared to people who don't lift at all.
That's what I was 99% sure was the case, but just wanted to make sure we're clear so that nobody is confused on that point. In terms of plyometrics, I feel like that's, I know because I do the show, that's an area I don't talk about very often. In part, maybe because I don't want to say I'm scared of plyometrics, but like when I hear plyometrics, like the first thought is like massive box jumps and depth jumps, kind of more CrossFit-y type of things, or at least stereotypical CrossFit type of things. Are those the type of plyometrics that we should be doing? Are you more of a proponent of something different that I'm jumping to the wrong conclusion in my head?
So I think there's a couple different types of plyometrics, or the way that we talk about it. You'll see some plyometric like specialists, they'll talk about like only these exercises that focus on short ground contact times as plyometrics, whereas other people in the strengthening world will talk about any sort of power exercise like a box jump as plyometrics too. And I think they're both beneficial for different reasons. So for your example, if somebody doesn't like doing box jumps or something that's like a big movement like that, like a broad jump or a squat jump or something like that, I show them this paper that came out last year that looked at this exercise that I call the double leg pogo jump. There's a lot of different names for it, but basically you keep your knees straight and you're okay, standing up and you're hopping on your toes. So you're okay, using like your calves and the elasticity in your Achilles to jump. It's kind of like jump roping.
I was
like that
say, if I'm hearing it right, just jump roping, but don't bend your knees is what we're hearing.
Pretty much. Yeah. Okay. And so what they did, they were trying to find like what's the minimally effective dose for this jumping exercise and does it affect running economy or race times. So I'll have to go back and look at the exact numbers, but they started out with like 5 sets of 10. So like not a whole lot.
And I mean, in my head, again, just to make sure I'm understanding and hopefully other folks are understanding as well. 5 sets of 10, we're talking like 10 jumps is going to be 8 seconds,
yes,
12 seconds, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So 5 sets of 10 jumps. And so, yeah, 10 jump ropes. But the one key difference is they cued these athletes to jump as high as you can.
Okay.
So you're really kind of like springing off of your calves here.
Right.
But yeah, 5 sets of 10. And then they rested for like 50 seconds. Though no matter what, the program took 5 minutes.
Okay.
And what they did over the course of 6 weeks is they increased the number of repetitions and the rest got a little bit shorter. And by the end, they were doing, I think it was about 100 reps, but still 5 minutes.
Right.
And it was the same sort of running economy benefits as the strength and conditioning exercises. So it was like a 2 to 4% increase in running economy.
Wow.
Just from doing this basically jump roping exercise as high as you can, mm-hmm, for 5 minutes a day. And that's something that I think is approachable and doable for a lot of runners. Like, hey, if you don't want to do all these fancy plyometric exercises, how about this? Can you do this exercise? Right. And they're always like, oh, yeah, I can manage that. So I think it's a good entry point. And, like, the data's there to show that it's a helpful exercise. And I generally get a lot of buy-in with that. Like, I can do this. I don't want to do all this other stuff, but I'll do that.
Yeah, no, that's got my gears turning because I think for me, like I said earlier, maybe a little bit scared of plyometrics and not so much for myself, although it's part for myself, because I know that just me personally, I'll throw myself under the bus, and maybe this is definitely where we'll start to wrap things up for sure, because we're going to run out of time if we don't. But my whether you want to call it flexibility, my mobility, my range of motion for, you know, I can't if I'm honest and being brutally objective, I can't get to parallel on a squat. Like it's just not, doesn't happen, without losing balance, without some type of support, et cetera, et cetera. Working on it, but you know, slow gains. But the point being that if I tried to do some really good explosive squat jumps or box jumps, things like that, I would be hard pressed to say that I could do those with the type of good form that, you know, I could probably do them and I probably wouldn't injure myself. But like, I just feel like I'm worried about increasing the risk of injury doing something like that with, you know, half-baked form, because that's where I'm at right now, you know, in terms of mobility, flexibility, et cetera, et cetera. But those pogo stick jumps, or even, I'm assuming maybe even you could progress that to a single, you know, doing it single leg, doing one leg at a time. Those sound very much doable. The risk of injury sounds, I mean, that's basically what running is hopping on one foot back and forth. So the risk of injury is not as high as I would assume it to be with some type of an explosive, you know, vertical jump, broad jump, et cetera, et cetera. So I can see, I guess all I'm saying is I can see why that would be a great entry point, and talk about, you know, 2-4% improvement in running economy. Like, I mean, come on, why am I not doing this? I guess if I'm going to keep myself under the bus here.
Yeah. And another option that I tell people is just jump roping. Okay. I need to go back and dig this up, but I posted a study a while back. It was a jump roping program, and they gained like 1.5% in running economy just from jump roping. So like, there's options that are approachable and doable and have like studied benefits for runners.
Yeah. And, you know, 1.5%, 2% may not sound like much, but like you said, you know, if that's the equivalent of, you know, spending $270 on a pair of shoes that you can wear for one race, and you get that benefit every time. And oh, by the way, it probably continues to compound if you continue to do it over time. Pretty small investment for the ability for a pretty big, you know, payoff at the next race and the next race, and the next race.
Yes, for sure.
Love it. Love it. Like I said, we got to wrap this up. I could keep going for days here. I barely scratched the surface. I'm gonna go ahead and say, Nick, I'm gonna try to get you back here at some point, not too immediately, because I need to respect your time, but some point in the not too distant future, I'd love to continue the conversation. But before we wrap up, I got to ask a philosophical question, and I'll promise this is the last question of the day, Nick. Philosophical question, just open ended. It's nothing super technical, nothing even super specific to anything that we talked about today. But I just be curious at this phase in your life, you know, after running in high school, running in college, getting back into the sports, still playing with figuring out the marathon and enjoying the half marathon, et cetera, et cetera. Why is running still so important to you? Why is running? I mean, we didn't even really get into some of the, you know, the professional side of it. You built a business around running. But why is running still such an important piece of your life in so many different areas?
That's a good question. I mean, a lot of reasons. Like you mentioned, I've built a business and a lifestyle off of this. Lifelong friends that I've made through running. Like, I'm sure it could have happened in other sports, but my wife always says, so she wasn't a runner growing up, and she's come to a bunch of different running events with my college and high school friends, and we always leave, and she goes, oh, everybody is just so nice. All these runners are so nice, and I find that everywhere. So it's a great community. And then it's, I don't know, it's a great like peace of mind exercise, and it can be so social, where you don't necessarily get that in other sports as easily. Like where you're just going out for a run and, you know, chatting with your friends. And then, it's great to kind of push yourself and see what you're capable of too. So there's so many different ways you can approach running. And I think that's what's so great about it. Like whether you want to try to break 3 hours in the marathon, or you just want to get a little bit healthier, like, or if you want to go out and, you know, run in the mountains, or like, I don't get a lot of that since I'm in Chicago, but like that's a whole different experience that just opens up all these great, you know, this relationship with nature. Mm-hmm. And so whatever you want to do, there's something that running can offer, I think. And it's, I think it's beneficial for almost anybody who wants to try it.
Love it. I love it. As always, I'm just kind of nodding along. But y'all, if you want more of the good stuff, and Nick's got nothing but good stuff, rebuiltpt.com, once again, is a website, on the socials, at rebuiltpt. Give him a follow. You won't regret it. Lots, like I said, lots of good stuff. Every time I see him coming across my feed, I'm like, oh, yep, stop and read this one. You know, it's one of those where it's going to be worth the little pause of the scroll and the read. So at RebuiltPT on all things social media. Dizruns.com/1227 to get you back to the show notes for today. We'll have links to all of Nick's social medias, website, and anything else we talked about today. And the Endure book was mentioned. We'll make sure to link to that if you haven't read that book. It's a good one for sure. But Nick, thank you for making the time today. Man, this was, I would say it was as good as I expected it to be, but I think it was probably better than I expected it to be. I just appreciate the work you're doing, appreciate the knowledge that you share. And, hopefully, this was all right enough that we might could do this again somewhere down the line, but thank you for the time today, my friend, and nothing but the best to you going forward.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it. And yeah, whenever the time is right, I'll be happy to come back on. I can talk, you know, running for hours. So I'd be happy to do it.
All right, y'all. Thanks so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Nick almost as much as I did, because I'm pretty sure that there's 0% chance that you enjoyed this chat as much as I enjoyed being a part of it and learning from Nick and hearing some of the things that he shared today, some of the science, some of the data, obviously just some of his experience as well. So if you came close to enjoying it as much as I did, then this is rating pretty high on your list, I would think, of previous episodes of this show. But one way or the other, hope you enjoyed the chat. And as per usual, be curious to know what stood out to you from today's episode. What was your takeaway from the little takeaway du jour? Isn't that what we say? Takeaway du jour? Yeah, what was your takeaway from our little chit-chat today? For me, I mean, lots of stuff, especially as we got a little bit nerdier into some of the training stuff and just the science and various bits and bobs. But I think the big takeaway for me, or at least the one that I can maybe communicate the clearest, maybe I don't know whether it was the biggest takeaway for me or not, because I think it was something where ultimately we were kind of in agreement on, but it was the idea of preparing for a race, right? And that whole adage of, you know, try everything in training so that race day goes well. And just that's not, especially with things like fuel, not always doable. In part because of different paces, and you're running race pace for a whole race instead of race pace for a section of the workout. But I think what stood out to me, or, you know, kind of further cemented that feeling that I have already about that topic of practicing fueling and on race day is different than practicing it in training, was when Nick was talking about just all the other aspects that go into it. When you're traveling, when you're eating different food, when your sleep is different, you know, let alone race day atmosphere and excitement and things like that. But just the fact that yes, practice things in training, right? I mean, that makes sense. Even if I've kind of maybe pushed back on the idea, like at the end of the day, I mean, it makes sense. But don't just assume that the exact formula that works on a training run, no matter how hard the training run might be, no matter how many miles you do at race effort or faster or whatever, just don't assume that because it worked on training in a training run, that it's guaranteed to work on race day, because it might, hopefully it does, but it might not. And especially, you know, the harder you're pushing, the harder you're racing, the finer that line is of fueling enough and optimal fueling and too much fueling, and then the potential ramifications of overfueling and having your gut turn sour and maybe, you know, at best, I guess, slowing down and feeling nauseous, at worst, you know, running from one porta potty to the next. So anyway, I mean, just, yeah, obviously, again, keep practicing stuff. You know, and from a clothing and a gear standpoint, yeah, certainly don't try anything new on that front on race. Or at least there's no reason to. But from a fueling standpoint, you know, race day is different. Race day is different for a lot of reasons. So you can try to prepare, but there's also a little bit of experimentation that has to go on race day, which is also, you know, tying into another part of the conversation, how come a lot of times, you know, it's not always a perfect straightforward trajectory on race day. Sometimes you have a rough race and then a little bit better, and then you correct a little bit, and hopefully it keeps getting better as you go. But anyway, Somewhere in there was my takeaway, one of many from today's episode. What stood out to you? What rattled around the most? Was it something we talked about science-wise, something we talked about training-wise, some piece of Nick's story that resonated with you? Let me know. I always love to hear those things. At DizRuns on all the socials, DizRuns@gmail.com if you want to shoot me an email. And, of course, you can head over to the show notes for today, DizRuns.com/1227. DizRuns.com/1227. Beneath the photos, beneath the links, beneath all the things, there's that comment box. Feel free to fill that joker out. Type away to your little heart's content, or at least I think there's like a 3,000 character limit. So you can type for a while before you run out of room. And then just hit enter and type again. You know, if you got more than 3,000 characters to say, maybe do some editing. You know, I mean, maybe. But if you need to keep going, hey, just leave a second comment and keep on keeping on. But love to hear from you. Love to hear your takeaways if you're willing to share them. One last reminder for the giveaway. Again, if you haven't gotten entered yet, I don't know what you're waiting for. Your odds are just getting worse, right? Like every month, the odds are a little bit worse because more people join. So get yourself in it to win it. If you haven't done so already, DizRuns.com/giveaway, DizRuns.com. You can also get in from the homepage. One way or the other, get your name in the hat, or at least your number in the hopper, and may the random number generator pick you this month, and then let's work together. 16 weeks on the house. DizRuns.com/giveaway. And with that, we'll go ahead and wrap this one up, y'all. Thanks for the time. Thanks for the attention. Thanks for taking Nick and I with you today. And until next time, y'all be well. Take good care. Thanks again for listening. And we'll talk soon, right? Later, y'all.